You're listening to the Real Answer to Addiction podcast. This resource exists to give real hope and practical help in finding forever freedom from addiction. We hope you enjoy.
Hey guys, welcome to the Real Answer to Addiction podcast. I'm here with some close friends of mine that I have known for a long time that will give some context on that here in just a minute. But Greg and Warren are here from the Empty Chair Endeavor. And they have a ministry that helps to equip churches, pastors, and just people in general of how to help people who have lost a loved one, so a child or a sibling. I'm going to let them explain a little bit more about that here in just a minute. But thank you all so much for being on.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
Nice to be here, man. So nice. Thank you.
Absolutely, man. So Warren and I go back actually almost 12 years now. He's actually the guy that picked me up from the rehab center that I was at, where I was a heroin junkie and I had about a week sober or less. And you took me to church that night and I've been clean ever since, man. So the Lord radically snatched me out of the garbage I was living in, through your faithfulness, bro. So it's always a treat to get to talk.
Likewise, my friend, likewise.
And then, Greg has also been a part of our church for a long time. And before we jump into the Empty Chair Endeavor and, what that's all about, will you kind of give some context of your stories? So, Warren, would you mind going first? And then that Greg will go after that. But what prompted you in your personal life to be a part of a ministry like this?
Well, I appreciate you asking that. And, guys, we sit here today and it's December the 5th, 2022. And December the 15th, 2020, almost 2 years ago, right? Just a couple of days away. It was really a normal day, just get up in the morning, go to work, coffee to start my day like all of us do, right? Get things up and moving, not so usual rush to make a breakfast appointment that I had, but all I can say is nothing prepared me for the phone call I received just about 3 hours later from my wife telling me that I needed to come home. I drove home having absolutely no idea, Chris. And my daughter Chandler had passed away from an accidental drug overdose that morning. We actually just got thrust into a group that you just don't want to join, right? The parents who have lost a child. And to say this, I would be saying it lightly. It was truly excruciating pain, overwhelming sadness, thrust me really into a state of paralysis, which I'm sure that many of the folks that listen will understand. And that paralysis actually made me reach a point of where I felt as if time had stood still. Everything just came to a stop. Couldn't rewind what took place that day. And I had no desire to move forward right at that point either. I really and truly didn't. The toughest part was that, I had no more time to spend with my beautiful daughter, Chandler, no more chances to talk, no more chances to laugh. But one of the things that she had is she had such an infectious smile that brightened the room. I mean, it just brightened my heart, brightened the rooms of people around her. And that was taken away from me, taken away from everyone who witnessed it as well. And so I was just really left only with her memories, knowing that, hey, we had all these times together. We had a chance to do a lot of cool adventures. We went skydiving. We did just lots of things that, that fathers will always remember with their child. But it was really at that point where, we had a lot of friends that surrounded us. I actually made it to the house before I did that morning. And we were truly blessed with a community of friends that helped us walk through this journey, a very lonesome, a very tough journey, a journey that nobody wants to go on. But what I realized as we began to step through that journey, if you will, that I watched people in their awkwardness. I watched people just not knowing what to say, not knowing what to do, how to respond.
Yep.
Because it's really tough. And the reason I can say it's really tough is because I was once there, you know, and I feel bad about the way in which maybe I didn't try to minister to people and try to help them as they walk through that. Mm-hmm. It's pretty easy. Ironically, I actually attended my uncle's funeral this morning. And as I sat there this morning and prior to things going on, everybody talked about my uncle, right? They talked about the craziness of him, things that he said, things that he did. And he was quite a character. But what I realized is nobody came to our house and talked about Chandler and how unique she was, how special she was, how different and how vivacious and the things that she brought to life. There were a few people that did, but as a whole, everybody just really didn't know what to do, right? It's not the natural order of things. Things are supposed to take place where your father, your grandfather, your grandmothers and whatnot pass before your child, just as we as parents feel as if we should pass before our child.
Yeah. So
it was actually during a time of where we were going through radical mentoring group at church.
Yeah.
Greg and I were in there together. And through that time of just doing that program, God began to lay upon my heart you know what? I need to help create something that's out there that can help people realize that it is okay. And it is spiritually what we're to do as brothers and sisters in Christ is to keep that memory alive, help those people. And it may be the fact that we help those people through presence, prayers, hugs, just being there for them and not being afraid. And what I realized is we're all afraid. We're all afraid of death. We're all afraid of losing that person. But it was just laid upon my heart. God laid it upon my heart to say, you know what? You need to help be a part of something along with others, such as Greg, to show folks that, equip folks, empower people to, number one, do what God asked them to do. Number two, to be brave and bold. And number three, don't fall to the fear of humanness and not be there for them.
Yeah, so
that's kind of where that part of the empty chair endeavor was created for me. It's kind of like thinking about the empty chair. Well, guess what? That chair is occupied by a space that'll never be filled again. But it's also occupied by the reluctance and apprehension of people as they come around and try to approach the chair, if you will, approach me, approach Greg, approach anyone that may be listening to know that, hey, it's okay. And because it's okay to be there, because a lot of times it's nothing more than walking up and just giving somebody a good old bro hug, if you will, and letting them know that you love, care, and want to do that. So this ministry for me is all about equipping people, equipping the folks that know that person the best to be able to help and facilitate those days, which are so lonely. So hopefully that was good.
No, that's incredible, man. That's incredible. And man, you know, I can't imagine what it's like to lose a child. I lost my dad, obviously, when I was about 19. But, you know, like you said, the inverse order there isn't meant to be like that. So how old was Chandler when she passed away?
Chandler was 27, and she's 30 now. And so, celebrated her birthday a couple of weeks. Months ago.
Amazing. And with her drug use and stuff, had that gone on for a long time, or was that a pretty recent just kind of aspect of her story?
Well, one part of that story was that, she had struggled a bit off and on throughout the years, but she had had a really good runway, if you will, of being clean, being riding things well. And you know, it's one of those things where when you surround yourself again with the same things that you surrounded yourself with before, people, places, et cetera, sometimes the fall is there. And I think that she, by any stretch of the imagination, thought that this would be the final time? Absolutely not.
No, absolutely not.
But it was just a situation where she slipped back into it. And unfortunately, that was the one time that God decided to take her home.
Yeah. I'm sure the people listening here, a lot of them are, you know, either, you know, currently or have personal experience with addiction and have lost a lot of friends, you know, to it. And they understand that very, very well of, you know, not intending, you know, to overdose by any means, but, you know, having it happen. I know I've had friends, you know, myself that have walked through or that have passed away unintentionally from drug overdose. But all right, Greg, how about you? So your story isn't exactly the same as Warren. It isn't involved with drugs and alcohol, but do you mind kind of giving a little backstory of just how that you ended up starting this ministry?
Yeah, there are so many similarities, obviously, because of the journeys that we both have been on. And interestingly enough, Chris, you may or may not know this, but when Ryan, our son, and Chandler were growing up, we were friends even back in those early days. And Ryan and their son, Chesley, were always hanging out together. And as I understand it, Chandler was that pesky little sister that always wanted to be right there in the middle of things. She and they have been a part of our lives for a very long time. So I guess I'll go back a little bit further and just briefly say this, that God blessed Kathy and me with two very beautiful, amazing children, Ryan, who was the younger of the two, and Whitney, who was almost 9 years older. And we thought, like so many families, you know, when Whitney's two or three, we'll start trying to have another child. And we wanted two. So it didn't go exactly as planned. So fast forward 6 years, we went through a number of years of infertility. And then finally, Kathy got pregnant and carried a little girl, actually, we found out, until I guess she was at about 14 or 16 weeks. And we named her Chelsea, as a matter of fact. And she died in the womb. We discovered it when we went through, went to have one of her checkups. So that was a huge hit for us, because after about 5 years, we just really thought, okay, this God has taken care of this problem and we're going to move forward, but not to be. So it was really tough on Kathy particularly, but you know, it was a source of grief in a different way, because again, we had her named already. And so a few months later, she was able to get pregnant again, amazingly, and miscarried after a few weeks. So at that point, we just kind of thought, you know, we've got one very healthy, beautiful little girl, and we're going to be content and satisfied, and we're just going to move forward. So that's exactly what we started doing. Kathy started going back to Francis Marion University to get her master's degree. She calls me one day on the way home from class and says, I am going to stop by my OB's office because I am so incredibly nauseated and see if he can give me something for the nausea. Turns out that she was very pregnant. And so to our great surprise, she had a picture perfect pregnancy. And that was Ryan. And so in May of 1989, God added that second child, and our family was now, and as far as we could see, was complete. We had everything that we needed, everything that we wanted. We were a very happy family. And for the sake of time, I'll fast forward once again to the night of October 25th, 2015. That was the night for us, Chris, when everything changed. Our world was turned upside down. The following morning, when I got that phone call that every parent dreads, right, Warren?
Yep.
We got the call that Ryan had taken his own life around midnight. And he was probably 800 to 1,000 miles from home. And so for us, we were left totally in shock. We didn't see it coming. There were no signs. He didn't leave a letter or a note. Nobody had any idea this was coming. As a matter of fact, I was able to speak both with his family doctor and the psychiatrist that he was seeing for depression and anxiety. Not long after we found out, neither of them saw it coming. So it's amazing how well, when someone's made that decision, how well they are able to hide that. Because I think a lot of times they just don't want to add that burden to parents or to a mate. And at the time, I didn't say this, but, you know, Ryan was actually married and had a 9-month-old daughter when this happened. So he left behind a young widow and a little girl who would never have a memory of him.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, it just left us absolutely shattered. You know, yeah. We never in a million years would we have thought that we would have lost one of our children, let alone lost it to suicide. Hmm. And I'll say this because it's one of those quirky things about grieving. Chris, it took me 5 years before I could even say the word suicide. It was so cold and so impersonal that I would just say Ryan took his own life.
Yeah.
So it left us with so many questions, like I'm sure with Warren and Christy. Same thing. When you lose a child and it's sudden, you don't see it coming. There's no warning. You wake up one morning, your child's no longer there. And they were there when you went to bed that night. So you're left with a lifetime of these were things that we wanted to do. These were the plans that we had. We wanted to see Ryan grow into his role as a dad with this sweet little girl. And all of a sudden, that's done. I mean, it's over. There are questions that we would never have answers to on this side of heaven.
Yeah.
And probably when we get to heaven, those questions are just going to all fall away when we see him again. But here, you're totally unprepared, as Warren said a few minutes ago. Nothing could have prepared him for what he found out that morning. Nothing could have prepared us for that phone call that we received. And we weren't even home. We were actually up in the mountains of North Carolina when we got that call. So we had about a 4-hour drive home. And I'll say this, what was really cool, Chris, is that, you know, we were alone in the car together for 4 hours. And it was probably the longest drive we have ever had to make. Yeah. I'm not even sure how I drove that car. I think probably God's spirit was driving that car through me. And we were just broken. We drive up in the driveway and we don't even know what to expect at this point. Before we got out of the car, I look in the rearview mirror and I see Warren and Christy walking up to the car. And they helped us get all of our luggage out, got it into the house, got us settled before everybody started flooding in. And Kathy and I will never forget, they gave us the gift of their presence. if my life depended upon it today, I couldn't tell you a word that they said that day. But what we won't forget is that they were there.
Yeah.
How they knew what time we were getting home is still beyond me. But it was so cool. But that we stepped into something that we just never could have imagined. And like Warren, until that day, we were living on the other side of this too. And like Warren and Christy, Kathy and I knew other people who had lost children along the way. You feel so terribly inadequate when it happens. You're afraid that if you say something, you're going to make it worse. You're afraid if you don't say something, you're going to make it worse.
Yeah, right.
It's like a lose-lose.
Right. Yes.
So unfortunately, we, like a lot of other people, just opted sometimes to do or say nothing.
Yep.
And I know now that was not the best decision. So, but all in all, Chris, people, we had so many people that surrounded us with their love and compassion and kindness. I mean, we were doing life with people in a small group, and they were there from the very first moments, and they have been there with us. It is amazing. And that's how God designed us to do life, not alone, but in the context of community. And I'll tell you, I shudder to think where Kathy and I would be today were it not for that close community.
Yeah.
And were it not for the fact that we walked into this with a rock solid foundation of a relationship with Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't want to know what it would be like to step into a whirlwind like that without him. I wouldn't want to know. But I want to say this, because one of the things that we as a ministry with the Empty Chair Endeavor want to do is we want to help survivors understand that as bad as it is today, as much as you're hurting today, and as impossible as it might seem, there is hope. We're living examples, we're living proof that there is hope, not on the other side of this, there is no other side of it, but there is hope on this journey of grief. So grief and hope can coexist side by side.
Right.
And, you know, you've heard that phrase, and I think it's scriptural, you see it, but God.
Mm-hmm.
So we, Kathy and Whitney and our daughter, enter into this place of brokenness and darkness in it. Like with Warren and Christy, they felt like they couldn't see a way out. You know, was life ever going to be good again? Is this how it's going to always be? And I will tell you that over the past 7 years, God has very patiently and very lovingly healed us. We're not finished. He's still healing us. And he's restored such a level of contentment and joy and peace and hope again that we just didn't think would ever be possible. And so I want to make sure that I take this opportunity to give him that credit and that praise and thanks, because without him, we would have crashed and burned at a much more significant level than that. And, you know, there's a verse of scripture from 1 Thessalonians chapter 4 that it talks about how it says, we don't want you to grieve like the rest of men who have no hope. And that's what I'm talking about. And that's what Warren and Christy would tell you too, is that we don't grieve as believers, as like those who don't have Jesus, because they don't have that certain hope that we do. They don't have that foundation that we were blessed with. And that's not to boast in any way, shape, or form. That's all him, not us. And I would I will tell you too that we we're so thankful for the truth of Romans 8:28 that God is able to take all things and use them for good in the lives of the people who love him.
Mm.
When all of this happened, we couldn't have possibly imagined anything good. I mean, God, what good can you bring out of us losing Ryan? But I will tell you, over and over and over again, God has shown us his goodness. I think Ryan's touched more lives from heaven than he has when he was here. I mean that very seriously. As we've shared his story, it's touched people's lives. And so that was the background for where the empty chair endeavor came from for Kathy and me.
Yeah.
And, you know, we knew early on that we wanted to do something to help other people who would be at some point where we are, where we were at that point in time. But we didn't know what it would look like. And God also knew that we weren't at a place where we could have done it.
Yep.
So he gave us 5 years in that healing process to get to a place where I retired. And 3 or 4 months later, I just sat down during the course of that summer and started writing about our journey. And from there, as Warren said, he and I were in a mentoring course together, and we were already, I mean, we were friends. Warren was in this with me from the beginning, so we had a lot of conversations about it. And when they lost Chandler, I think that that passion to help other people started growing stronger in both of us. And from there, we got together with another couple who had lost their son right not long after they lost Chandler.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of where we came from.
Wow. Wow, man. Well, thank you both so much for sharing those stories. I know personally for me, when I have to dive into the past, you know, sometimes it's painful to go back into the pain of that, you know. So thank you all for doing that and for being willing to do that. I love also just the hope that each of y'all shared about how, you know, you've heard this phrase a lot. We've heard it a lot, but from, you know, pain to purpose, you know, type of mentality of how the Lord will use all the hard things we go through in order to advance his kingdom. And that was even watching the movie Till last night. I don't know if y'all seen it. It's about Emmett Till, who was lynched, and it's the story of his mom, helping others in that same situation, and playing a big part in the civil rights movement and all that. And my story as well of from addiction into helping addicts and people like that. I love how the Lord will just kind of use our pain and our experiences in order to help others. But let's hop back into what happens when you do lose a child or a loved one. Just physically, psychologically, even spiritually, how to view God and how that journey looks and emotionally. So do y'all mind kind of going into that a little bit of the personal experience, but also the scientific end of things as well, just what happens to your body?
Sure. Yep. You want me to handle that, Warren?
Sure. I mean, I can jump in as well, but you go ahead and I'll fill in whatever we feel needs to be added or whatever, right?
Absolutely. So to be specific, Chris, I think trying to look in from the outside, I think what people see and observe is the emotional aspects of it. And I think that's where, for a lot of people, it kind of stops. What they don't really understand is that physical and spiritual and mental components that you mentioned are so incredibly real and so terribly impactful on someone's life. I think the Warren would agree with this, that initially you're just really thrust into a state of shock.
Right.
Where it's just a state of disbelief that, and even in some respect, denial sometimes. This, you know, this couldn't have happened. This is not real. It's almost like a nightmare. And you wake up and you for a second you're like, did this really happen or was I dreaming? And unfortunately, it is an awful nightmare that really did happen. And so I think what happens to a lot of people, I know Warren and I have used this word a lot, is you almost feel emotionally and mentally paralyzed. And to some degree, even physically, because it leaves you, I don't know about with you guys, Warren, but I know for Kathy and me, one of the things that we struggled with was early on having to face making decisions and just how impossible that felt. You know, decisions about, you have to pick out a casket, you have to make funeral arrangements, you have to do an obituary, and the list goes on and on and on. And then all the legal aspects of it that you never envisioned yourself being a part of, right?
Right. And, you know, I'll just kind of dovetail off of that or add to that. It really is the hardest thing in the world to make any decision. And this may even sound a little trite, but even making a decision about, hey, what are we going to do tonight? What are we going to eat tonight? What are we going to talk about tonight? Even gets to the point of where it's even the smallest decisions are actually mountains. They everything in your life becomes a mountain, and so you really have to slow down to think. To try to process, because your mind just goes really distant and blank. And this may be an appropriate time, but this is certainly not a time for being isolated, putting yourself on an island. Because when you put yourself on an island, specifically in this situation where you lost a child, then you do pull away and you don't get that opportunity to talk to people, actually visit the people, and to allow yourself to therapeutically heal. Because the one thing that I know we'll probably get into in a little more in a few moments, but just to have the opportunity to physically hear my daughter's name mentioned by somebody else is therapeutic. It's therapeutic to my heart. And I know Greg and Chris, you can see the smile upon my face just as I think about Chandler. And I know Greg and Kathy and my wife, Christy, also, when we can talk about Chandler, it just lets folks know that, number one, she was alive. She still is alive. She just has a different residence right now.
Absolutely.
Right? That residence is heaven. But I hope folks on the podcast can hear the fact of the joy that is brought out when you potentially ask a question of those people, that it lifts us up emotionally, lifts us up physically, it lifts us up spiritually to be able to talk. So just to throw that in there, it's not something that we don't want to talk about. It is the same way that we, just as I related to earlier, we're talking about my uncle today at his funeral. It's okay at some point, at a certain point, to talk about Chandler, to talk about Ryan, to ask us questions, because it is therapeutically. That's what we need the most, is that healing, knowing that we're not going to be healed tomorrow, but it's part of that long-term everyday process that we desire. So.
Yeah, man, I could not agree with you more. I think one of the things that we want people to understand who are on the outside looking in is that there is nothing sweeter to a grieving parent's ears than their child's name.
Yeah.
And one of the things that we fear the most, I think you would agree, is that people will forget who our child is.
Mm.
Because yeah. they're not physically here any longer. But as you said, Chandler and Ryan are more alive today in heaven than they were here. So we have the absolute certain hope that we're going to be reunited with them again one day. And so we can be at some point along that journey, as we begin to make a transition, I think, between from the focus being on the loss and the hurt and the pain, as that transition moves more over into a celebration of who they are, a celebration right. of their lives and all that we have, all that we've had together for all of those years, it brings back joy. We're able to smile again. We're able to laugh again and have a good time, enjoy life again, because our children would have wanted that. And right. it's what God designed us for. Initially, you feel guilty. That's one of the things that I would, if you're listening today and you're in a place where your grief journey is still fresh, the first time that we laughed, the first time that we felt like we were having a good day, we felt guilty. We shouldn't be feeling like this. We shouldn't be feeling good. We shouldn't be laughing. We lost our son. So be kind to yourself if that's you today, because that's going to happen. But as you begin to share more and more about your child, that the good memories and the things that you love about your child will begin to supersede the sadness and the darkness that, you know, the place that you're in now. I think one of the other things that we would want people to understand too is particularly in that early season of grieving, it's not uncommon for survivors to be very uncomfortable in social settings, we're in crowds. And I would include church in that, Chris. You know, it was difficult. I think we didn't go back to church for probably a couple of months after we lost Ryan.
Yeah.
And I believe that first time was to a Christmas Eve service at a different church with some family members. And all we wanted to do was to get in and get out as quickly as we could and not really have to engage. You know, it was awkward. It's hard to explain, but Warren knows exactly what I'm talking about. And if you're listening today and this is your story, you know what I'm talking about as well. And so be patient with them. If you know somebody that's going through this, just be patient. It's not because they don't want to have anything to do with you anymore. It's not that they are pulling away from life or pulling away from the church even, or from God. It's just, it's such a hard place to be. And it's a place they've never navigated before.
Mm-hmm. That's great. So you guys have, I mentioned quite a few things on just how to care for someone who's lost a loved one, to be around, to ask questions, say their name, all of those things. So what are some other things that if there's a person listening, and even for me, honestly, they've had, people who've lost a loved one, and that they're like a lot of us where they're like, I don't know what to do. Like, how much is too much? Do I quote a verse, or is that going to be hateful? Is it, I call them every day? Is it, I never, I feel like there's all these swirling ideas. And also I think on top of that, that we live in a culture that is pain averse and is comfort addicted and is youth centered, in the sense it's all happy-go-lucky. It's all, that you have to be smiling and happy, or I don't want to engage with you. So how do you engage? What are the things that you should do, shouldn't do, what's helpful, unhelpful, and, you know, best practices in that.
So Chris, I'll just kind of jump in here just and throw out a number of things. And I do want to totally address anyone that's listening. Actually, something that you just said a minute ago. You said, I don't know what to say. What we do know is honesty many, many times is best. It's okay to tell someone point blank, I don't know what to say, but what I do know is I am so sorry. I love you. I'm here for you. And then I'll revert back to the same thing I said earlier, is even that bro hug. I'll kind of relate a story to you. My brother-in-law came on the day that we had Chandler's funeral, and he came and came in the house, and he just gave me a huge bro hug, right? And I was so thankful for that. But then he went over, and he's a businessman, so he took some Christmas cards, because it was that time of the year where you write Christmas cards to clients and whatnot. And he sat down at the table at our kitchen table, and he was writing Christmas cards. But probably about every hour and a half or 45 minutes or whatever the time frame means, he just would get up. He'd walk over to me. He'd put his arm around me, and he'd just give me a big hug. Said absolutely nothing, but looked me in the eyes and gave me a hug. And I knew at that point, I kind of even thought, man, why are you sitting at my table writing Christmas cards, right? I was like, this is not even right. But in essence, it's exactly what was right. He was there. It was his presence that meant more to me today than it did that day. But what I do know is it was just nice to have his presence. And, you know, just some other things that my wife and I have talked about quite a bit is, you know, we need to realize that as brothers and sisters in Christ, for those people that we're in life with, that we do community with, ministering to a grieving parent is not a once and done deal, right? It's not something that, you know, you come in, you kind of drop off a dish with some food in it. You tell them how sorry you are that they lost someone. And then it kind of goes away.
Yeah.
You know, it's those everydays that we have that we have to learn how to navigate again. It's like what we're coming upon now, Christmas season, right? We just walked through the Thanksgiving season. It can be overwhelming. It can be totally overwhelming. And I never know in the morning when I wake up exactly what that day will bring. I would just tell folks out there listening is when the Holy Spirit nudges you to make a phone call, send a card, get a box of donuts and a coffee and go see that person, go. Don't let fear captivate you. Don't let it keep you from making that contact. You know, it's been about 2 years now since Chandler passed away. And, you know, in the early stages, I do know is it is very hard for someone to come sit in a house and say, hey, tell me about your favorite memory of Chandler. Mm-hmm. Tell me about your favorite memory of Ryan. But what I do know is that first interaction may not be the right time to ask that question, but I can promise you, I would love to tell anyone who would come and sit in my den, couch, porch, whatever the case may be, of my favorite memory of Chan and the things that we got to do together, just as I know Greg would want to do the same thing about he and Ryan and the things they did and the special times they had together. It's as I said earlier, it's therapeutic. You know, probably one thing I would say to the folks listening is, you know, the thing that we've become so accustomed of saying is, how are you feeling? Well, how do you expect I'm feeling, dude? Right? She asked me, how do you expect I'm feeling?
Yes.
If you ask me again, I might punch you, or you might have some unsavory words that you didn't expect to hear. So, you know, maybe even a better phrase to use is, how are you holding up?
That's helpful. That's really helpful.
How are you holding up? You know, and I would just tell the folks that are listening, being concerned about talking and being concerned about the fear that keeps you from doing anything, just know that your words in my grief will never wound me more than I've already been wounded. And the reason I can say that is because you can't, you cannot create a wound that's already there. So I would just like folks just to kind of ponder that thought a moment and just think that, hey, no, it's okay to not truly understand what to say or what to do. But the worst thing we can do is nothing. And that's the whole premise behind why we're here, is to help people to realize that it's okay to fumble and it's okay to do. But if you ask God, prior to walking into that encounter, God, give me the words to say, give me the things to do, allow me to be a vessel for you, and then act, there's a great chance that you've asked him that he's going to allow you to do the right thing. But without taking action, you'll never know. We'll never know. You know, and I know this is a podcast, and we all believe in Jesus, and we all know different verses of the Bible and different things to say. But early on, walking into my living room and quoting me a Bible verse, hey, you know she's in a better place. Right now, today, no, I don't know she's in a better place. Right this minute, I don't. And telling me that whenever I have just lost her is very hard to hear. It is very hard to hear, because you alluded to something earlier, Chris, about where are you spiritually? It is dark days, my friend. It is such a dark time in your spiritual walk.
Yeah.
It's a time of growth. It's a time of asking so many questions, righteous anger.
Yep.
Why, God?
Yep.
Why? Why couldn't I have been there? Why couldn't I have stopped this? Why couldn't I have done something? So I just revert back to ask, seek, and take action. And that ask, seeking, and take action only comes from Jesus. So prior to entering that room with that person, man, just ask. Just ask how God would like for you to do that, how he would like to present. And one other thing I would tell folks too who are listening is, when you leave their home, don't ever say, call me if you need anything, because guess what? I'm never going to call.
But,
you know, because really and truly, what has just transpired? You've now shifted that burden from the person that's coming in the room to that burden's now laying upon my shoulders on top of everything else I'm carrying. Now have to call you to come tell me? No, man. Just be that person that shows up, you know, just shows up at the doorstep. It's not what we do in today's society anymore. We don't just show up on people's doorsteps. We don't just go over on a Sunday afternoon and sit down and visit with each other. We don't knock on the doors. But in this case, know that that's what you need to do. You need to get out of the comfortable and delve into the uncomfortable. Because we know that this is an uncomfortable walk, not only for us, but it's an uncomfortable walk for you. And guess what? Don't let fear captivate you into doing nothing. And I would just say to anyone who's this listening, you know, a sense of gratitude for friendship is really sharpened significantly by grief.
Oh, how true.
There'll be friends that showed up immediately after Chandler died, who held our hands and right there with us through everything. That those circles of friendships change. There'll be times in which those folks that used to be those people that you could count on aren't anymore. And I'm not saying that you discount any friends. I'm just saying that we need all our friends. We need everybody. We need anyone who knew her, who knows us, to come, to be there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, grief is unique, man. It's so unique. It's almost like a fingerprint, right? So individualized for every single person, and it's different.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I would just say to the folks who are listening to realize that your grief walk is different than anyone else on this planet. Can Greg and I and Kevin and Donna and Kathy and Christy, we all have a different walk through this process. Every single one of us, even though we're all on the same team. Hmm. I would say, don't expect too much out of yourself as you walk into this. Don't expect too much out of your friends as you walk into this. Just find that place in which you can be still, you can be quiet, and you can pray. You can ask God to sustain this day. And Chris, I know it's a statement that goes around in the community, right, of one day at a time. But yep, literally, my friends, if you're listening right now, this walk is one day at a time. It is literally one day at a time. I wake up in the morning, and some mornings I can put my feet on the floor with ease. And then there's other mornings where I can just barely move. All I want to do is go get my cup of coffee and sit. And I would just say to folks listening is, you know, think of a rope. Right. Think of a rope and it's a braided rope. And you have a rope that's maybe two strands. Well, it has some strength, but a braided strand of three or more has a significant amount of strength. So when I say that to folks listening, I really say it to number one, count on your spouse. Listen to your spouse. Ask your spouse questions about their losses, particularly whenever it's dealing with a child. And know that the other part of that braid that helps strengthen and will sustain you is Jesus.
Yeah.
Without Jesus, as Greg said in the introduction to his story, without Jesus, I don't know where I would be today with being able to walk through this, nor do I know where I would be not only this day, but tomorrow. I have to count on him. I have to count on him for joy. I don't seek him for my happiness because happiness is fleeting. It comes and it goes, but I know his joy is always there. And I would just say, please, please, please don't expect more out of yourself and allow your grief walk to be your grief walk, but don't ever forget that there's joy there to that will sustain you and will bring you through this. And, you know, Christy had a friend, actually it was her cousin, who said, we're all just here walking each other home. And really, and I know I've talked a lot, so I'll be quiet, Greg, here in a moment, let you talk, my friend. But, you know, we all are just all walking each other home. And I know that Chandler knew Jesus. We're blessed to know that she knew Jesus. We didn't lose her. We lost her here. She's no longer with us. She's no longer here, but she didn't pass away into thin air. She hasn't gone forever. Her memory lives on. She just basically walked home. She walked straight into the arms of her father. Her hurts, her struggles, her pains were all taken away. And he loves her. And he is so proud of her, just like I'm proud of her. I want folks to know right now, I'm proud of my daughter. I love my daughter. I literally am excited to call her my daughter, Chandler Mert, my daughter. Hmm. Even though it hurts, as you can hear a little bit in my voice, I think, probably through this.
Absolutely.
I know that he has her. I know that God is still good, even when life isn't. And all I can say is just praise be to God, and know that tomorrow when I wake up, I'll walk through the same things as what I've already recounted, but I will know where my joy comes from, and my joy comes from him. Do I miss my little girl? You better believe it. And I can still call her my little girl, even though she's 27. And I think most fathers would understand that, that once they're your little girl, always your little girl. But just don't be so hard on yourself that you don't allow yourself the time to grieve. You don't allow yourself the time to be happy, and you don't allow yourself the time to enjoy. And my last thing I would say, and then Greg, I'll allow you to finish up here, is, you know what? Please see your child for who they were created to be and not as who you have envisioned they should have been. Allow God to write the story. And Chris, my friend, you've told me this how many times, you know, let God write their story. And you probably can make it much more eloquent than I did. But you've told me specifically for both of my kids, let God write their story. And even though Chandler's not here, I know her story was written beautifully. It was a magnificent story. And I'm just thankful that I had a chance to be part of that story. So folks, the last thing I would say to you is look towards the joy, look towards the happiness. And when you remember your child, remember them in good. Remember them in the things that bring you happiness, because that is part of the healing process. And just know that this wound will never be taken away, but you can walk through it daily with Jesus.
Well said. Chris, let me tack on to a couple of things that that Warren shared. You asked about this earlier, about the spiritual impact that that losing a child has on the survivors. You know, I read something the other day that just gave me pause when I read it. I got my notebook and wrote it down, and it's so true. What the quote was, in times of severe testing, even the best theology will fail unless it is accompanied by experiential knowledge in the form of a relationship with God through Jesus.
That's so good.
When you walk into something like this, that's where theology intersects the relationship. And if all you've got is the theology, you're in trouble, because it absolutely will fail you. I'm thankful, like Warren, that when he was 5 years old, and a lot of people may think that's mighty young, but Ryan initiated a conversation with me one day about inviting Jesus into his life. And I thought he was probably a little bit too young to really understand. And, you know, in all my fatherly wisdom, I said, well, let's talk about that a little bit more. And we drove a little further, and he said, well, Dad, why can't I do that right now? It was like God tapped me on the shoulder and said, yeah, why can't he do it right now? Oh, crap. Okay, I'll pull over. So yeah. Pulled over on the side of the road, and I prayed that prayer with him to invite Jesus into his life. And I'm so very thankful that Kathy and I know beyond the shadow of a doubt that Ryan is with Jesus now, and that he's been healed, and that we will join him again one day. He just selfishly chose to go there first. Leave us behind.
Yep.
But, there are a lot of other, when you asked that question earlier about the impact of grief, there are a lot of physical impact symptoms as well. A lot of survivors, Chris, will experience PTSD-like symptoms. And that's particularly true when it's a sudden tragic death, like a homicide or suicide or a sudden drug overdose, where you just, there was no warning whatsoever. Interestingly enough, you know, we talked earlier about how you begin to get healthy again as you're able to make that turn from the focus being on the death, the darkness, the loss, the pain, to a place of being able to celebrate their life and who they are again. Sometimes, though, that's where people get stuck and they have a really hard time making that transition for a multitude of reasons. There is a disorder that has now been added to the American Psychiatric Association's diagnostic handbook, and it's called prolonged grief disorder. It actually carries a diagnostic code, so that when these patients are being seen by a physician, a psychiatrist, probably generally speaking, there is a code there for insurance purposes, and a code there, you know, where there is an actual diagnosis to treat from. And there are a lot of symptoms that go along with it. And for the sake of time, but it really is just two or three of the symptoms would be just a disbelief, almost a inability to deal with the reality of what's happened. And sometimes it's a feeling as though you actually literally lost a part of yourself. And in some respects you did, you know, but they really almost get lost in that rabbit hole of feeling like life is meaningless again.
Yeah.
Or feeling like life is meaningless and they'll never know anything other than that again. And there's intense loneliness in it. So if you are listening today and you know somebody who's exhibiting symptoms like this, and you're really concerned because they just don't seem to be getting any better whatsoever, might not be a bad idea to at some point have a conversation about the possibility of seeing somebody such as a counselor, because we all need other people. And sometimes we need intervention to help us get through those difficult times, because it can turn into clinical depression as well. And sometimes you just can't pray your way out of that. It's like any other illness. Sometimes it requires treatment in order to be able to have a starting place where you can get better and get well eventually. And the last one I'll mention, and I think this one is predominantly associated with moms who have lost a child suddenly, whether they're young or whether they're young adults. It's called stress cardiomyopathy. That is the medical terminology, but we know it better as a broken heart syndrome. Right. And that is very real. A lot of times these survivors will present at an ER with heart attack symptoms, classic heart attack symptoms. And until they get there and run the test, it's almost impossible to distinguish between whether it really is a cardiac event or whether this is due to the grief. So I won't go into any more detail for the sake of time, but understand, if you're listening, if this is something that you're experiencing, it's normal. Don't be surprised. Normally people recover from these. It's not associated with death, sudden death, or early mortality, but it's very real. And so people, as Warren said, grief is a very strange creature, and it just is so terribly unpredictable.
Really helpful, man. I know when Warren was talking that he kind of highlighted three kind of categories of things, to be helpful to people. So prayer was one of them. Presence was another one. And then to be proactive in how to engage and helping people. Is there anything else that y'all would add to those three categories of things? Maybe it's a thing you've already said, but to be helpful in these times, and then we'll wrap up with one more question after this.
I think Warren probably touched on this, but I would just reiterate, if he did, I can't remember. Take a risk of putting yourself in potentially an uncomfortable situation where you may feel very inadequate. I've been there. Warren's been there, even though we've experienced it. Take the risk of asking about their child, because they want to talk about their child. We want to talk about our child. We love when people ask us about Ryan. Take that risk and be a good listener. You don't have to have all the answers, because there aren't any, but just give them the gift of your presence and being a good listener and being there with them in the long, for the long haul. As he said earlier, this is not a one and done type thing where you carry a meal and drop some food off or some coffee and you've done your part.
Yeah.
Just be with them for the long haul.
Yeah. And I would add kind of what you just said, listening is so, such a lost art in today's society, right? We all, especially men, are fixers, right? We want to fix everything for everybody. And here in this situation, some of the questions that are asked are so deep that there really is no answer to them. Quite honestly, most times, I just want people to listen. I just want to be heard, if you will. And trying to fix a situation for somebody most times is never the right thing. And I think most people, even when they do go see someone, talks their self through their own problem, right? So listen to yourself. Listen to what internally is being broadcasted to your soul. If you listen intently, you will hear. And guys out there, just know that there is no immediate fix. There is no fix tomorrow. There may be no fix in 10 years. But by listening and offering an ear to the person that's beside you, to your closest friend, is more than they could ever ask for. Mm. It's more than they can ever ask for. So Chris, Greg, the things that you guys said is spot on. And I would just say there's a number of different books that are out there as well that deal with grief. And there was one that I read that was given to me by someone. It was, I'm trying to make sure I say this right, guys, before I say, it's called Finding God in the Gray. That's what it was. Yeah, Finding God in the Gray. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that it said in there that really, really stuck out to me came out of Psalm 18:11. And, it's probably something that I've said to a lot of folks when we've had the chance to speak. Greg's spoken to folks. I've spoken to folks. Kevin and Donna have spoken at different places as well. But, this scripture is basically says, he made darkness his secret place. When we encounter dark circumstances in our life, knowing that God dwells in the darkness and sits down with him and sits down with us, he met us where we were. He sat down with me. He sat down with Christy until we could walk again. And as he made himself real, we knew that although life would never be the same, it would always be different, but it could be good again. I would just say that again. It could be good again. And life can be good again for those of you who are listening as well. It'll never be the same, but it can still be good.
Yeah.
And that verse just meant a lot for me to read that. And the book, Finding God in the Gray, it was a very nice book to read. So I'm not just touting that book, because there's many, many others out there. I'm just mentioning that was just one thing I gleaned from the book at that point. So, yeah.
Chris, can I offer this right before, as we start closing out, because it's something that we talk a lot about, helping people find hope again in the aftermath. And I just want to share this because our journey's been 7 years now, and Warren and Christie's is just a couple of years.
Yeah.
So I want to borrow something from Psalm 16. Because I can say this now in describing my life today, 7 years later. I love these two verses. It's verses 5 and 6. It says, Lord, you have assigned me my portion and my cup. You have made my lot secure. The boundary lines for me have fallen in pleasant places, and surely I have a delightful inheritance.
Nice.
6 years ago, I couldn't have said that. But today, and honestly, just in the last few months, God gave me these two verses. And I'm so incredibly thankful that God has loved us through the darkest place in our life and has just brought us through to a place of light and life again. And I'm just thankful. We knew that God was good before all of this. We knew that mentally, we knew it.
Yep.
But I can tell you that today, Chris, I can say that God is good with a whole different understanding of that. And I think Warren would agree wholeheartedly.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
And that chapter, Psalm 16 is one of the chapters that has really ministered to me in my life. And I think one of the underlying themes of this podcast and what each of y'all have said and my life story and kind of the ministry that we do here is that reality that he's where the joy is. And that's really easy to have that intellectually, especially when things are going well. He's where the joy is. Oh, yeah. But when you have a hard season or that you lose a loved one or any of that, that reality becomes critical. And it's like you said, that you have to have your joy in him, because if not, then you'll crumble. But exactly like those passages say, that you've even come to the point where it isn't just he's where the joy is, but that I trust his will and I trust his hand, even when it looks crazy. Absolutely beautiful, y'all. Thank y'all so much for coming on and sharing your hearts with us and the hope that you have. Before we end this thing, is there any other things that y'all want to say? And then how do people get in touch with you if they need help or want training or would ask y'all to come speak at an event that they have? How would they get in touch with you guys?
Well, I would say, Chris, primarily, if they want to get in touch with us and learn more about the Empty Chair Endeavor, they can just simply Google it, emptychairendeavor.com. And on that website, they'll find our email address is hope@emptychairendeavor.com. They can send in a request through that if they would like for us to speak or if they would like to meet, whether on a Zoom call or anything the equivalent of that. We also do have a Facebook group site. It's a private group that people who are in that season of life can join if they would like. We will be starting in January our own podcast, and it is going to be called Hope After Child Loss. So we've been working on that for the past several months, and it's just, you know, as we have had some experience doing these podcasts, I think it's, you know, God just sort of helped us understand this isn't, this is a piece of the new technology that we have that we did not even foresee taking advantage of. But right. when we, Kathy and I have had so many people contact us from just a couple of podcasts that we've done and wanted to know, they just wanted to connect with us because they've lost a child.
Yeah. Yep.
And so we're just very thankful that God has made provisions for us to be able to do this. So we're very thankful for you offering us this opportunity to come and share our stories today.
Yeah. No, it's a privilege for us, man. You know, we have a lot of people that can relate with this, you know, that are, that's a part of our audience here and a part of our community. So thank you all so much for being willing to come on. Is there any last words you guys have, Warren?
I would just like to say thank you, Chris, for giving us this avenue to come on. We're so excited to be a part of your ministry through the podcast. And I would just tell folks, we're not professionals, but guess what? We know that as we move forward and listen to God, He will continue to open the paths and the doors for us and teach us things that we don't know already, such as what Greg was alluding to with podcasts and different means of reaching folks. But we are here, we are available, and we are willing. And I think you've heard throughout the podcast our passion, and our passion is that just to equip others and equip those who are close to the ones who lost a child to minister to their people, to the people that surround them. So know we're here, know we're excited to continue to see what God has in store for us. And hey, we're in the infancy of this, but we're looking forward to whatever God has in store for us as we move forward. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Awesome, guys. Thank y'all so much.
Thank you for listening to the Real Answer to Addiction podcast. We release episodes on the first Thursday of every month. Please remember to subscribe, rate, and review if you've enjoyed listening, and feel free to share. If you're interested in getting in contact with us, feel free to reach out to us at chrisdewministries.com.